Got two great guests for this particular discussion, and I'm going to start off by reintroducing the audience to Anton Daniels, who came on the show a little over a month ago and was absolutely fantastic. He didn't wait for a seat at the table in Detroit. He built his own. College dropout who spent his 20 years grinding 16-hour shifts in a steel plant, taught himself software engineering, and used that corporate money to build a real estate and media empire. Today, he's a titan in the digital space. There's no way around it. Over 2 million subscribers and 1 billion views. He's built a brand on a simple, often polarizing premise: personal responsibility over everything. He tells the hard truths that many are afraid to say, and he's faced the fire for it, and he hasn't given a damn. Whether you call him a visionary or a provocateur, you can't ignore him. It's just that simple. That's Anton Daniels that I'm talking about. Welcome back to the show, my brother.
Happy to be back, Stephen A.
Happy to have you. And Theron Johnson, I couldn't wait to have him on the show as well. He spent much of his career inside the rooms where political decisions get made. Longtime Democratic strategist based in Atlanta. He's helped elect mayors, advised governors, worked on presidential campaigns. And he's become one of the most recognizable political voices in Georgia. From Barack Obama's historic 2008 campaign to advising Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed, Theron built his reputation as a sharp political operator with deep ties to the Democratic Party. Today, millions know him as a television commentator who regularly defends Democratic policies while offering insider analysis on everything from elections and race relations to the future of American politics. Whether you agree with him or not, Theron brings the perspective of someone who spent decades shaping campaigns, building coalitions, and helping Democrats win. For the very first time, welcome to the show, the one and only Theron Johnson. What's going on, man? How you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Stephen A. Thank you so much for inviting me, man. And congratulations to your Knicks. Let's just get this
That's
off
right.
the... Yeah, right away, man. Yeah, your Knicks did it. I saw your interviews. Right. I saw you celebrating. Right. So congratulations, my brother.
That's right. Well, listen, I just want to say for the listeners out there, the viewers out there, we won't be talking about the Knicks because I pride myself in trying to be kind to my listener, to my guest. And we all know what we did to the Hawks. And we know what we would have done to the Detroit Pistons. Anton's Detroit Pistons, but we didn't get a chance to do it. But I'm not going to rub it in. I'm going to be classy here. I'm not going to rub it in, guys. Let me get right to it, because obviously, Theron, you're a liberal. Anton's unapologetically conservative. Both y'all have stated the state of Black America right now in the United States, what would you say it is right now? I'll start with you, Theron.
I think the state of Black America right now, Stephen A., is one that's fluid, in your words, but it's something that we need to all be focused on, because as we sit here right now in the United States of America, we know that Black unemployment is high, and we care about a lot of the issues that white, Hispanic, and Asian people care about, and here they are, and in this order. Number one, we want to be able to be safe. We have allowed the Republicans and others to say that we don't believe in law and order. And I'm here to tell you that that's not true. Number two is that we want our children to have an opportunity, particularly our Black children, to have an opportunity to go to schools, whether it's private schools or public schools. But then when you get into healthcare, and we know the alarming rates of people with diabetes, people who have heart conditions, and even mental illness in Black people right now. Just studies have shown that young Black people right now are committing suicides at a higher rate than we've ever seen before. So I think the state of a Black America right now is struggling. I think that some of us are prosperous, but some of us are actually not bringing enough people along with us. And then lastly, I think that we have to make sure that for those of us that have been blessed to have an opportunity to have a good paying job, to have a family structure, there's a lot of folks out here, particularly kids, depending on what zip code you're born in, will determine your actual pathway to success. A lot of folks in Atlanta and places around the country are being born below the poverty line. And if you don't have that family structure in place, access to quality paying jobs, and also healthcare, we as Black Americans, we got to do better.
Darren, before I get to Anton, who do you hold most culpable for the state of affairs involving Black America at this point in time?
I think it's a combination of a lot of different things, but it's a confluence of the lack of leadership on the federal level, starting with President Trump. And then I think the second part of it is that we've got to be more emboldened to hold the elected officials accountable. You can't just come in our communities and tell us things that we want to hear. We got to make sure that when we elect you, particularly Black women, who is the backbone of the Democratic Party. We got to make sure that we hold them accountable, and not just Democrats. We got to get into those rooms with Republicans too, and don't let them off the hook. So I think it's a confluence of a lack of leadership on a federal and state level, but also making sure we hold our Black leaders more accountable to make sure that they deliver on what they promised us.
Anton, when I would ask you the same question, what do you believe the state of Black America to be at this particular moment in time? Who do you hold most culpable for it?
I'm not sure exactly what he means by fluid. And I'm assuming that he defined that based off of the different parameters by which he spoke about the Black community. However, I think I agree with him, except for I would describe it as in shambles. Worse off than we've ever been, freer than we've ever been. And the fact that we're willing to blame Trump, although we've had decades of opportunities, Black cities, you look at some of the blackest cities in the United States of America, Memphis, for example, is in shambles and they needed Trump's help. And I think that there's a lack of accountability and victimhood. And as long as we continue to promote that it's somebody else's fault, you know, I was looking at Juneteenth in Chicago, right? And you had over 7 people killed and 36 people shot. And while we were focusing on whether or not Asians and white people, whether it's Carmelo Anthony or Cyrus Carmack, is responsible and if they should go to jail or not, in every city across America, especially where predominantly Black people live, you don't have to kill each other, but there's drive-bys and there were over 113 shell casings where 12 people were shot on Juneteenth itself. And so when I look at the state of the Black community, it has nothing to do with the political landscape. It has everything to do with self-accountability, regardless of whether or not you're picking the right curriculum, if you want to go to college or you want to go to community college. Healthcare, I don't think that we're concerned about it. Self-care, I don't think that we're concerned about it. And more importantly, I think that we're more concerned about self-care with regard to promoting ourselves and the culture that's the worst for us versus taking accountability for the state that we have ourselves in. We don't have to have children out of wedlock. We don't have to put ourselves at a disadvantage, and we don't have to have children in poverty. And we have more technological advantages as far as research and understanding of the past than we've ever had before. But for some reason, we're still worse off when we continue to vote the same way while requesting nothing from politicians and letting women lead us to the polls. And that is the direct result. You're seeing it transpire inside of the Black community.
One of the things that I got to ask you about, Anton, is that, you know, so many times we see things from an historical perspective. We see the Civil Rights Act of 1964. We see the Voting Rights Act of 1965. We see policy that has been implemented to address the unfairness and the inequity that exists within our system. I do understand when people look at it in this day and age and say, look, we're a lot better off than we were before. Let's stop acting like that. But there are, I think one of the things that concerns me about folks on with the conservative tilt is that there's this notion, sometimes people act like it never existed. There was never a problem. These things never needed to be addressed. It's basically just about pulling yourself by your own bootstraps and going from there without really addressing the fact that the inequity that exists in our system, it's always been something that the Black community has had to battle against. And sometimes you hear conservatives talk, and some of them sound like, yo, that's not true at all. What do you say to that?
I don't see any inequities. I was born in the blackest large city in the United States of America. Everybody knows that. Detroit, Michigan, still here, born and raised, contribute to my community. And there's just some very basic fundamentals that we lack that has nothing to do with the history of this country, right? We're in 2026, and there's people that come over here with absolutely nothing. There's Africans, right? Illegal and legal immigrants that have come into this country and done exceptionally well, right? And so when I start to have this conversation, there's really two different types of Black people, right? And I'm not going to use the word to describe the other type of Black people, but there's people that continue to hold on to the victim Olympics. And I've never experienced slavery in my 44 years on this earth. And so the expectation for my father was I had a greater calling for my life. And that's what I leaned into. I leaned into my religious beliefs. I leaned into my community. I leaned into my schoolwork. I leaned into taking accountability. I leaned into working hard 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And as long as you are doing what you're supposed to do, there are no limits. And so I don't see the inequity. right? That is a word that is used in order to make an excuse for why you're not doing what you're supposed to do. We don't have any excuse for why we go into prison. We don't have any excuse for why we continue to commit crimes. And we don't have any excuse for why we continue to not enroll in the curriculums that's going to pay us the most money. Every time you go into a college campus, everybody is in business, marketing, and communications. Nobody is going in any STEM fields. And every time I see a woman go into anything school related, it's always to be a nurse. I don't understand. I really genuinely don't understand. We're the most educated, we're the most enrolled, not even the most educated. We're the most enrolled, but we're the most in debt. And so we have insight and information on how we can make better decisions, but we lack the discipline and we lack the wherewithal to actually make those decisions and be conscious enough to see it through. And so I don't believe in that. And I believe the fact that people continue to try to make it seem like we're behind the eight ball is enabling us to continue to go further down this drain. And the minute that we start holding ourselves accountable, holding ourselves, we don't need Trump. You don't need Barack Obama. I've seen them making their speech about hope again. And I respect you, Theron, for the work that you did with the Obama campaign in the South. But we don't need anybody to sell us anything or to give us anything. We can take everything that we want if we really want it.
Theron, I mean, listen, you served as a regional political director for Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Obviously, you were senior advisor, former Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed, and helped shape policy and political strategy during Reed's administration. You hear Anton say what he just said, break down what he just broke down. Give your initial reaction to all of that. How do you feel about what he just said?
I think what you just heard from Anton is a sort of a certain demographic, a certain population of Black people in this country. I mean, what you heard there, Stephen A., is much like my story. He's born in Detroit. I was born in Atlanta. I grew up in Athens. I had a mother who never finished high school, didn't meet my father until later on in life after I graduated from college. But I had a structure around me where my mom understood the importance of education. Then I had to understand, after graduating from Clark Atlanta University, play football, hey, not going to the NFL, what am I going to do with my life? And so I think the one thing that I would tell Anton that I know that he was a direct recipient of is that there were some Black people, maybe some white people, Asian, Hispanic folks, that took a time to really invest in him, right? And so I think that, you know, we have a lot of folks who are born in poverty. And you look around the country, is that, and I said this earlier in my opening statement, kids who are born in certain zip codes, the structure is not there with the family structure, because what the family does, Stephen A., they can teach you how to behave in school. Then it's left up to our teachers, whether it's public schools or private schools, to basically be able to teach you how to learn. And remember what I said, not everyone has the luxury of going to private schools. That's why I believe that we need to do more to invest in our public schools. Now, once you get out, here we go. And this is where I think I benefit with Anton, is that you then have to figure out, okay, how am I going to utilize the system in its current form? You mentioned Barack Obama. You mentioned Kasim Reed. We got Andre Dickens, Keisha Lance Bottoms, all these people, the late, great Congressman John Lewis, Stephen A. These are all people who I work for and I'm very close to. The difference was is that with having someone that was Black in these positions of power, it gave them a level of understanding when they were in the room and decisions were being made about jobs, education, healthcare, entrepreneurship, where we were going to allocate resources to certain communities, you had that person in the room. What's also lacking, he makes a good point, is that some of our cities that are being led by these Democratic mayors, a lot of them of whom are Black, we got to make sure that we support them and don't just criticize them when there's shootings and killings, but let's talk about the good things that they are doing. So I fundamentally disagree that now that Black people basically are just complaining about everything. The majority of Black people that I'm friends with and the majority of people that I talk to, they want a good paying job. But unfortunately, they can't keep a job because basically folks are not hiring. We have folks in this country right now who are overly educated for jobs, are taking jobs that they're overly qualified for, and people that are qualified for the jobs actually can't get them. And then lastly, I would say this. We have to do a better job as a community. Stephen A., you're doing this, right? Putting people in positions to make sure that when they've done the work, when they've actually made the sacrifices, right? They've been given opportunity, somebody's helped them, give them a platform to talk about their story and about what they're doing to try to help people. And so again, I fundamentally disagree with Anton with as far as, you know, having babies and going to jail. We know that basically the crime rate and the is the same with a Black person with a job and the same person with a white person with the same job, right? If you give people a job, crime goes down. People are more productive citizens. But if we don't get them access to jobs, if we don't have politicians in place to make sure that the blatant racism that we do see in this country, where people are basically know when I go in a lot of rooms, folks don't look like me, but I'm scared. that ruin. Even though sometimes I'm more educated and more experienced, we got to make sure that we hold those folks accountable. So I think that's the difference between that. And as I've been very blessed to be in positions, I'm always, Stephen A. and Anton, trying to figure out how do I help the young Black brothers and the young Black sisters who are trying to actually make a way and make sure that they thrive in their communities.
I
was getting ready to say, I saw you shaking your head. Feel free to comment. Go ahead.
For every Andre Dickens, you have a Lori Lightfoot and Brandon Johnson over in Chicago. You have a Karen Bass who is completely incompetent, right? As a person that is born and raised in Detroit, what I've seen is a predominantly Black city that was ran by Black people, Black politicians, whether you're talking about the mayor and the city council, you're talking about the school systems, you're talking about the police chiefs, you're talking about all of this. So when we're talking about identity, for whatever reason, people feel like you need somebody to look like you in order for you to do what you're supposed to do. And that has nothing to do with anything. As far as me and using myself as an example, nobody poured into me except for my father. My father was responsible for me because I didn't ask to be here. And so when we're talking about taking accountability, what I do see is people continuing to have children out of wedlock. What I do see is people not getting married. I'm even talking about the political landscape. I'm talking about the basics, the fundamentals. I work with automakers here in Metro Detroit, and so many new jobs was created. Chrysler, well, actually it's Stellantis, but we call it Chrysler here in Detroit, opened up a new plant. Ford went on a hiring spree as a result of the Trump administration. And the main reason why most people couldn't get a job, overwhelmingly Black people applied for these jobs, is because they couldn't pass the drug test. They couldn't pass the drug test.
But how prevalent is that, Anton? How prevalent is that? I mean, you can find those cases, but to give the impression that that's a vast majority is where the problem occurs. You really believe it's the vast majority?
50% of applicants that actually got hired or was on the verge of getting hired couldn't pass a drug test in order to get into the plant.
But Anton, let's go back to Detroit real quick. I know your mayor very well, Mary Sheffield. I actually supported her in Atlanta. Stephen A., she came here where no one knew her. She had some mutual friends, met this sister. And you can't tell me, Anton, having that Black woman with that rich history, right? I don't need to tell you her history, you know, her family, how she served on the city council president. You can't tell me having her in that room and not necessarily the color of her skin, but the content of her character and what she took to get there, you guys, as people who are citizens of Detroit, you guys are benefiting from that. I mean, she no one gave her anything. She ran against the establishment. She ran against the preachers. And so now she's trying to basically talk about people and getting them in position to get those jobs you're talking about. But I think I agree with Stephen A. Let's not put this on Black folk, bro. Hispanics fail drug tests all the time. Asians fail. And, you know, a lot of white people, and we're not going to even get into the thing around fentanyl and all the drug problems that a lot of our rural white class, working class people are filing right now. They fail drug tests too. So I think that's my fundamental issue with you. We can't just isolate that just to the Black community.
You're moving a goalpost because specifically the question was for the Black community, right? We're not talking about Asians. We're not talking about white people. We're talking about taking self-accountability.
No, I'm going back with Stephen.
I did ask the question. Darren, I did ask the question about the Black community. I didn't bring up any. Yeah. I didn't bring up any other community. He's right about that. I did ask the question specifically about the Black community. He's got me there.
I'm not going to lean into somebody else in order to justify why we not or why we are. Right? You have a responsibility as an American citizen and as a duty to your parents and the ancestors that came before us, especially with regard to the civil rights movement and all of the people that died and the people that suffered. We don't even show up at the polls and we don't even educate ourselves enough to understand the candidates that we're voting for. I'm not going to talk negatively about Mary Sheffield because she just got into office. Right. And I think that we should give her some grace and some opportunity to really show herself. And so even though I am a Republican, I do believe in supporting whoever is in office, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. But you can go further back. Forget Mary Sheffield. Let's talk about Kwame Kilpatrick. Let's talk about Mayor Coleman Young. Let's talk about all of the Black people that came before them that ran the city into the ground that ultimately culminated in the city filing for bankruptcy in 2008. That's not a mistake. It's not a mistake that Detroit had fell behind and filed for bankruptcy. Now, once Mike Duggan got into office afterwards, we had 11 consecutive years of surpluses that Mary Sheffield now can benefit from because she can stand on the shoulders of people that actually worked and did the work. And I'm not going to say that she didn't do the work because she was a part of the city council, but she can now benefit from people voting and saying, listen, I'm not going to vote based off of identity. I'm going to vote based off of the person that's the best for the job. And Mike Duggan, especially as a CEO of a hospital system and understanding it from a business perspective, gave the city an opportunity to really show itself and grow. And now that's what you see as far as Detroit benefiting, especially from working with business leaders like Dan Gilbert, the Illiges, and so on and so forth. They are the beneficiaries. But again, we want to ignore the people that did horrible for the city in order to catapult people that are now in office, but we can't forget the history in order to move the goalposts.
I'm gonna go this route. Both of y'all are coming from different perspectives, different sides of the aisle to some degree. But we're sitting here having a conversation, and I get the impression that if y'all were in a room together having to handle some business, y'all could reach some kind of accord, some kind of resolution. That's entirely different than the perspective that is disseminating out there to the masses. When we look at both sides of the aisle, one of the things that I've been on a warpath about is that I think the politicians have messed up our country because the polarization, I think, has been largely instigated by them. We live in a binary system. You got to pick one side or another. You can't find an accord anywhere. And I think that it's made us as a society more polarizing and more volatile towards one another than it has been in recent memory. I've run across people that are obviously considerably older that tell me this is worse than the civil rights era. This is what they've said to me in terms of how times are right now. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm talking about people in their 70s and 80s in terms of the volatility that exists amongst American citizens. My question to y'all is, if y'all had to, do y'all believe y'all could work together to find resolution? And if so, why can y'all, but so many people in our society are unable to pull that off in this day and age? Sure, go ahead.
I think that Theron is somewhat disingenuous, but you can work with that because you understand the disingenuous nature of the conversation is based off of him absolutely believing what he believes, right? He's not doing it to be malicious. He's doing it because he truly believes in what he's saying. And you can work with
that. But then why is it disingenuous? Why is it disingenuous if he truly believes it?
It's disingenuous because he knows better as far as, I think that Theron speaks to, just off of this conversation alone, he's speaking and reaching the lowest hanging fruit. And I know he understands what I'm talking about because he has worked in these political circles. When we're having these conversations, we're not speaking to the actual real issues. He's speaking to the talking points that a lot of Democrats use in order to justify or get people riled up to vote however they're going to vote or to stay in the same space as far as what I would describe as a Democratic plantation. I would be able to work with him because I know that he's smart, he's educated, and he knows what he's talking about. And so behind closed doors, he would be solutions-based. And so that's where you would be able to find that bipartisan agreement or, you know, you would be able to reach that middle road because people that are educated understand, even though if they're on the front lines and, you know, facing an audience, I believe that the way that they speak to the audience is much different than how they work with people that they know is educated and know what the solutions are or trying to find an equitable solution. So I think that I would be able to work with him. And I also believe that debate and conversation is good. Even if you have different talking points, even if you have different beliefs, you looking to, you know, a conversation is you looking to understand the person that you're having a conversation with. But I do think that just based off of the talking points that he has today, he's using similar talking points that Democrats use, especially in the Black community, to have people engage in a vote instead of educating them on why they need to do things differently.
So, Steve, let me ask you a question. Here we go. So, yes, I would be able to work with this brother, Anton, but I think that I would describe him as disillusioned. And I think that he actually is using his conservatism to actually convey a level of elitism when he just said himself that his father and everybody kind of poured into him. The party that he aligns himself with is not the party who actually is helping the people that look like he and I. And so the difference between, these are not talking points, Anton. The reason we're both on Stephen A. Smith Straight Shooter Show is because we've been putting in the work. I mean, when you look at the work that I'm doing every single day, right, it's podcasts, but it's also in the streets, making sure that I support my HBCU. It's making sure that when TSA workers are laid off at Atlanta airport and they have no way to get to and from work, I was the guy that was out there passing out the gas cards, right? Serving on boards to try to basically help people with reentry with an organization called CEO. These are the things that I do every single day. I think the difference between you and I, brother, which we will be able to work together, is that you come on a lot of these shows and you take a very controversial topic and you go viral, but you push the button, right? You push the button. But what I would challenge you to do is that when we would get in that room and we would hash it out, I'm sure there's a lot of similarities, but I fundamentally believe that the conservatism that you bought into and the criticism that you bestow on our people is not productive. It's not what's going to help us get to the next level. And so I do believe that you're putting in the work. Clearly, you've made it this far. But Stephen A., what we have to do more, as particularly as Black men, is have sensible conversations like this, represent our point of view in a very calm but direct manner, but also make sure that we don't abandon the core principles of who we are. Listen to what I said to you. You're talking to a guy who clearly didn't grow up with a father, right? A mom who only had a high school education, have an adopted sister, went to an HBCU. No one gave me anything, but I was able to utilize my political skills to get in the rooms. And that's why I chose the South in 2008 and 2012 on the Obama campaign. That's why I support our mayors as well. And I can talk about the city of Detroit, because when a Black woman, Mayor Sheffield, comes to my city, Atlanta, say, hey, I'm running to do something that's going to be better for all of Detroit, not just Black people, I support that woman. And so,
but
so
you just said that nobody gave you anything.
No. I'm saying to you, I had good mentors along the way, right? But I had a mother, a praying mother, who actually poured into me. I had an older brother. But when I gave the opportunity, there were a lot of people who helped me. John Lewis helped me, gave me an opportunity to run his campaign in 2008.
But no. You earned that. Let's be clear.
Anton, these are the different rooms that I'm in, brother. They're letting you in those rooms because you are the one of the few Black people that talk that conservative talk amongst those Republicans. You know how hard it is to penetrate when you are a Black male Democrat where there's so many of us? Yeah, so I had to prove myself. I had to work hard. Given opportunity, my wins and my merit-based strategy, right? Because at the end of the day, Stephen A., it's all based on merit, right? Can you really deliver on what you're going to do? And I'm a man of merit. So, yeah, so no one gave it to me. But, like, there were some people along the way, Barack Obama, who said, look, we're going to give you the South in 2012. So I can't act like I got here by myself. But I work hard just like you to make sure that when given an opportunity, I was prepared for the moment.
Let me stay with you for a moment before I get back to Antoine, because we're talking about, I mean, when you talk about Black folks, you talk about the Black community. Let's talk about the Black voters for a second, who've supported the Democrats by roughly 80 to 90% over the last several decades. We all know that. So if Black America is thriving, the Democrats wouldn't hesitate to take credit. They'd feel they deserved it. No doubt about that. But if Black America is struggling, which we obviously are, should Democrats bear responsibility for that? Which one is it, Darren?
I think Democrats have got to continue to make sure that we take credit where credit is due. If you just look at when Democrats are in office, where the Black unemployment rates are, it's always higher than when we see Republican presidents. And right now, Biden had a higher Black employment rate than Trump. Okay, then let's get into what Democrats need to do better. We need to make sure that we reward these folks, these Black voters, when they vote for us, by putting them in positions of power where they're competent and they're ready for it. Also, we got to make sure that we talk about some of the challenges, but we got to offer solutions. And that's why I'm so proud to be in Georgia and Atlanta, because a lot of our Black leaders, Stephen A., they're not just talking about the inequities, the inequalities. They're actually putting forth solutions. And it takes sometimes working across the aisle. It does take some bipartisanship, because we are a Black Democratic-led city in a ruby sort of red kind of purple state that's run by Republicans and state leadership. So you got to be able to have that delicate balance, that duality approach into it. So yeah, I think that if you put up what Democrats have done for Black people versus what Republicans have done for Black people, we've done more. Our challenge is making sure that we maintain that voter base and show those women and men every single day that when you put us in office, we're not going to forget about you, but also give us an opportunity to govern. And governing sometimes don't necessarily mean that you can just get things done by just focusing on Black issues. You got to be able to work with white, Asian, Hispanic folks. But at the center of your ability to work every single day, you got to have the advancement of Black people at your core. And I think that's what Democrats have done. And Republicans, honestly, they don't even elect enough of them, don't even nominate enough of them. And literally on the federal and state and the local governments, we don't see the results from the Republican Party that are benefiting Black people the way that we do on the Democratic side.
Anton, your thoughts about that assertion that the Democrats have done far more for the black community than the GOP, the Republicans, have ever thought about doing?
Again, it's your question initially, Stephen A., which obviously that was a moving a goalpost, another opportunity, was do you then take responsibility when you are not meeting the expectation as a Democratic Party for black people? And the answer was no, because he basically said, we just got to give credit what credit is doing. You're good. You're really, really good, Darren. And I like the way that you answer these
questions. I didn't answer the question, bro.
But you didn't say that they should take responsibility when things aren't going so well. And I would also preface this by saying that the majority of the jobs, because we can talk about the unemployment rate, but when you're really in the thick of things, and I know that he's in the thick of things like I'm in the thick of things, mm-hmm. you understand that a lot of the jobs that are being handed out, especially when we started to see the layoffs at the federal government level, right? And we seen Elon Musk and his crew and all of them went in there and they started to lay it off. We didn't see these same women getting these same jobs and being able to compete in the private sector as they are in the public sector. And what happens is they go into these jobs expecting to get their student loans forgiven, and they work there for 10 years in the public sector with that expectation. And at the same time, they don't meet the expectation to be able to compete in the private sector. And that's why you see a misalignment as far as the competitive balance when it comes to black people competing for jobs in the private sector versus the public sector. In a private sector, you actually have to be software engineers. You have to be mechanical engineers. You have to be in STEM fields and be able to get these same type of jobs and qualify to go up the economic ladder and not just in the political landscape or the public sector. And we cannot continue to let black women lead us, not only at the polls, but when it comes to determining what happens, you know, in these political circles, right? No, they do not take responsibility for what happens to the community. We are worse off than we've ever been in history. And more importantly, the Republican Party is not
than
there
we've ever
to
been.
Than we've ever been. In my opinion, I believe that we are, when you compare ourselves to other groups, when it comes to the wealth gap, we are worse off than we've ever been in my lifetime in my 44 years on this earth. And the interesting thing about the Democrat and the Republican Party, and this is why we have to have a mindset shift, is the Republican Party is not there to give you something. It's there to remove the barriers for you to do for yourself.
And the Democrats do that too. We're not out here just giving away stuff as well. I mean, we're actually trying to. But real quick, I want to ask you this question.
You see, winning positions created as far as diversity, equity, and inclusion.
The Republican answer when your Republican Party, you mentioned Elon Musk, DOGE is what mm-hmm. it's called,
Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah, you guys fire all these people in public sector. Isn't mm-hmm. it true that the Republican response from President Trump and others was go into the corporate world? Now, Stephen A., think about that. If you have spent decades and working hard to pursue public service, particularly in public health certifications, and you get fired for no fault of your own, just because this president did not like the CDC, not because you were doing a bad job, not because you couldn't actually do the job. And then the Republican response to these black women that Anton are talking about was go into the corporate sector. Mm-hmm. How is that logical?
Well,
guess what?
Well,
guess
let me
what,
say,
Darren? Hold on, let me chime in.
Go ahead.
That happens every single day in the public sector. You're not guaranteed a job.
People get laid off
through no fault of their own on a regular basis. When you go through an audit, when a company, Meta laying off people in order to be able to fund AI, right? Not that AI is replacing jobs, but because they need to spend more money while being accountable to shareholders. People are being laid off, white people mostly, over in Meta, and you don't have the opportunity to say, well, I didn't get laid off by any means of my own, I have to go and figure it out. You don't get a handout just because you got laid off.
It wasn't a handout.
First of all, I don't consider it a handout. They were working. They were working for that money. They weren't being handed something. That's number one. But number two, I will say this. One of the things that I will come back to you about, Darren, is this. The process of evolution never escapes any generation. I mean, it's not what it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. It's just not. And so when Donald Trump comes into office, and the one thing that I will say is the man didn't lie about what he was intending to do. He talked about shrinking government. Now, the GOP and the Republicans are known for shrinking government. And so I hated the fact that, you know what, they laid off a bunch of federal workers. I hated the fact that it had, a very big effect on black women compared to almost anybody, particularly in that D.C. area working for the federal government when they made all of those cuts. I hated that. I didn't like that at all. But in the same breath, I also saw it coming from a mile away. Because he said it was coming. He said it was coming. Because he said the government's spending too much damn money. Now, obviously, he seems a bit hypocritical with the damn money that somehow gets funneled into his pocket. Don't get me started. By the way, Anton, with a $1.8 billion slush fund that he tried to get, that he was going to oversee and allocate to insurrectionists. Like nothing was going to get in his pocket. I got you, but we were born at night, not last night. You got to be kidding me with something. Or the fact that the man is in office, and since he's been in office, he's reported to have made anywhere from an additional $5 to $7 billion in his own damn pocket. These are the kind of things that they're saying. Somehow, some way, the American people are suffering, but he's getting richer and richer. Him, his cronies, his families, but not necessarily the American people. I'm looking at it from that standpoint. But again, we all saw it coming, and he said it was coming, Theron. And so for me, I don't know how to answer that. Like, every administration has a right to invoke and implement their own policies. That's what they do, that they think is in the best interest of the American people. If you see it coming, you got to prepare accordingly. What do you say to that?
So I'll add two more things real quickly, and I'm gonna answer your question. We also saw the same president who told us he was going to build his ballroom and it was going to be funded by private dollars, and he just allocated almost $350 million from Secret Services. And it's also, when we look at where we are of this war in Iran, it's going to probably have a $132 billion negative impact on our economy at a time where he's doing all this stuff and we having to pay $4 in gas. But let me say this about what the president told us he was going to do. You're absolutely right, Stephen. He campaigned on Project 2025. He did talk about shrinking governments. But guess what? Newsflash. Democrats have also talked about less government and figuring out how we can eliminate waste. Biden did it. Obama did it.
I never heard that. I ain't gonna lie to you. I never heard a Democrat really talk about that. I really haven't.
Well, I'm here to tell you that I worked for these folks, and I knew that they would go in and look at certain departments, see how we can actually deal with. And after COVID, everything changed because we didn't have to figure out how to telework, right? We had to figure out how to do more ability to use virtual meetings and different things like that. But here's the difference. Obama, Biden, other folks did it. But it was metrics driven, Stephen A. It actually had, you had to actually put a cost tag on how much we were going to save and was the work going to be able to get done if you make these cuts. We know back to the CDC, that was a personal attack on a major federal agency based here in Atlanta in DeKalb County, where he fundamentally was mad about the use of vaccines. He put a secretary in there who clearly didn't know what he was doing. That was a direct attack. Now, when you start looking at the cuts to the federal education, right? Our education department. How are you expecting to approve public schools and to have a more educated workforce, that's what Republicans talk about, when you're eliminating the people who are doing the work every single day that are there to help these teachers, help these public schools thrive? And so, yes, he told us he was going to do it. It was too much. And I think we're seeing the consequences now. And that's part of the reason why you're seeing the inflation rate so high. Oh, by the way, Stephen, he told us he was going to deal with inflation on day one. Last time I checked, inflation right now is the highest it's ever been under Trump's administration.
I got that part.
Right now.
Make sure you say under Trump's administration, because under Biden, inflation was above 9%.
Percent.
And in some ways,
he lowered it. And then when Trump got in there, it was lower.
Inflation is only at, it's high expectations for Trump. You got to remember that when Trump left office the first time, inflation was less than 2%. All right.
And then when he came back, it was like, now it's the highest it's ever been.
One at a time, guys.
Under Trump, 3.5%.
Guys, one at a time.
That's not crazy.
Go ahead, then.
No. Under Trump, 3.5%. Now, you got to also do the math, because, and this is why I say disingenuous. So it'll be a lot of talking points that's thrown in. Oh, he campaigned under Project 2025. Trump obviously denounced that. He said he wasn't campaigning under Project 2025. There are some things that I will agree with you, and this is what makes me objective, is because I don't agree with the $1.8 billion slush fund, while at the same time, we do need to remove subsidizing private jobs with the public sector. And so an audit should be done. Audits are regularly done in the private sector, and we should be doing it with our tax dollars. But for whatever reason, we think it's okay to just throw money at the wall. That's why you're talking about the Department of Education. The Department of Education is really removing the federal government's hand from it and giving it back to the states, right? That's the true nature of what they're trying to do with the Department of Education. We know that money has been wasted for a long time, that kids have been suffering. We've seen under the Biden administration, kids suffering at a mass rate of learning disabilities. And now we have AI entering into the race, and we have all of these tablet babies, and we don't know what to do with it. And so you have to evolve, and you have to change how you're teaching these kids. And there's other things that other countries are doing that we can take into consideration and start to implement. But the reality of it is that you can't continue to blame other people for your shortfall. And the one thing that I do know for sure, and two things is for certain, is that Black people are going to vote Democrat regardless. So even when it goes back to his original point, when he's saying that we need to acknowledge and exalt the people that are being successful and that look like us, he still hasn't talked about Brandon Johnson. He still hasn't talked about Lori Lightfoot. He still skips over Karen Bass because they're doing a horrible job. They look like us, and they are a reflection of what is wrong with our politics and why we continue to vote Democrat regardless of the people that's giving us what it is that they're giving us. I don't agree with any of what he's saying right now, and I think it speaks to the lower thing.
But I think the one thing between you and me, Anton, is that all those people you just mentioned, I know these folks. Let's start with Karen Bass. This woman don't become a member of Congress to actually become the chairwoman of the Congressional Black Caucus and then running a city like L.A., which, by the way, it doesn't just take the ability to just get a certain sector of voters. You got to build a winning coalition. This woman did that in L.A. I was just with her in Long Beach, right, when we were at the U.S.
She's doing a horrible job.
Yeah, no, she's done a good job. She's doing
Did you just say she's doing a good job in L.A.?
I think she is doing the best to her ability in L.A. with the circumstances.
Let me be very clear. I'm not questioning that she's working hard and striving to do the best that she can. I'm not questioning her intent in terms of whether she cares about citizens. Now, I'm saying in terms of her efficiency, in terms of her productivity, did you just say that she's doing a good job in L.A.? Because I know a whole bunch of people in L.A. that would say, hell no.
There are those, yes. There are some of the folks that tell me that. But I said some other folks tell me that, you know, again, with the circumstance that she's under, right, with the economy that she's inheriting, with the lack of jobs, with all the different things that comes along with Los Angeles politics, I think that she's actually moving in the right direction. She has a very well-funded opponent right now. There's a lot of negativity out there about the job. But when I talk to you about the day-to-day services, making sure that the city have the basic services, trash being picked up, making sure that people actually can try to feel safe. She's doing her best to try
to
reduce
homelessness.
Traffic. I mean, these are all.
Wait. We have a.
What about crime?
More police officers choosing to quit than ever before in Los Angeles, similar to over in Chicago. She's regularly operating at a budget deficit, can't even balance the budget effectively. He's saying that she's picking up trash. That is the most basic.
But that's what people care about, and they do care about public safety. And I think public safety is a struggle for not just her, but for other mayors across the country. And it's a lack of funding from the state and the federal government.
They're operating at a $1.4 to $1.6 billion budget deficit, and they're projected for it to be higher. They've been operating at a budget deficit under Lori Lightfoot. It's ballooned under Brandon Johnson. We don't want to talk about the fact that they spent city resources on illegal migrants and housing them, and we can't even track where the money was going as far as who it is that was benefiting from all of this money and sheltering and things like that. There's a lot of gaps and a lot of lack of accountability, but we only want to speak on, even know how you can use Karen Bass as an example of what's right as a political person, as a mayor of a city, as a Black woman that is running the city into the ground. They don't even believe in voter ID. What has Karen Bass done? Give me one thing that Karen Bass has done that's been good since she's been a mayor of Los Angeles.
I think that if you're going to look at this when it's all said and done, the people of the city of Los Angeles definitely have some concerns about her leadership, right? That's what any mayor. I can make a case with mayors that people like them and people don't, right? But when you look at her ability to understand with the circumstances, actually being a partner with the state, calling out the federal government, she's got to continue to deal with public safety. I agree with you on that, Stephen and Anton. But when you look at her ability to basically get the funding that is needed and get things done, I think ultimately she's got a tough race ahead of her. But I think she's doing what she can do. And also, I mean, with the Olympics and everything right. coming, she's got.
You still think she's gonna get the? You still think she's gonna get support financially from a lot of people out there after the wildfires fiasco out there in the Palisades and all of that? You really think that's gonna happen?
The wildfires was another big case. But you look at her ability to be present, because one of the things that she got criticized for not being present. So during the wildfires, she was as present as she possibly can. And I think that if you look at the funding with the cooperation with the state and the federal government, she got to fix that. Yeah, she got to.
But you still haven't answered the question. What has she done? Give me one thing that she's done well in Los Angeles.
I think she's created jobs. I think she has definitely utilized her federal resources as a member of Congress to get money to help with infrastructure, which has been a big concern with LA folks. And I also think that she's doing her best to try to figure out a way with micromobility and different things to reduce the congestion and the traffic. And she said publicly that the traffic and infrastructure needs in the city of Los Angeles is a top priority of hers. But
no,
she's also
homelessness. Homelessness, drugs.
I'm getting there. Hold on. Then you get to what she's doing around homelessness. And we like to call them unhoused, Anton, as well, because they're all citizens. Homeless. Nah, they unhoused, brother. Don't see that. That's that disingenuous, that elitism I was talking about earlier.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
That's that conservative elitism right there. They're unhoused.
This is diversity, equity, and inclusion talk.
No, it's unhoused people.
Van life.
In Los Angeles, she's doing her best to find them a warm place to stay, prioritizing the women, while some unhoused men, they don't have enough shelters to shelter them.
Warm place to stay. Where is it cold in L.A.? Where the hell is it cold in L.A., then?
Wait, L.A. Stephen, you've been to L.A. It does get a little cold at night.
When is the last time that you walked Skid Row? When is the last time that you walked Skid Row? I walked Skid Row just
I walked Skid Row about a year and a half ago. I walked.
Okay, so you know what's really happening out there. You really understand the drug problem. You understand it is needed everywhere. You understand that you can't step over without stepping in some form of feces everywhere. Where are they cleaning up anything over in L.A.? What is safe in L.A.?
I mean, look, I think that you've been in L.A. I've been on Skid Row. That is an isolated area of a lot of unhoused people, right? No, it's unfortunate.
I just stayed right there at L.A. Live with Crypto.
But you and I both visiting, right? Anton. Like, we're not citizens there.
I'm there regularly. And when I stay there, I'm looking at this monstrosity of graffiti that is directly across from Crypto Arena. If you walk two blocks up the street and then you take a quick Uber, you're going to see people sleeping along the freeway on the entrance ramp.
Actually, Anton, you see that right down the block from the movie theater, which is right around the corner from Crypto.com Arena and the JW Marriott. You actually see that?
Right into the Ritz. That's right. But
I don't know how you defend this. Like, honestly, because leaders accountable.
She's got challenges, right? And the difference between you and I is that I'm willing to work with her to offer solutions and not just come on these platforms and
We need these people. These lifetime politicians.
Okay, so you vote her out. What's your
solution? From a business perspective, these are lifetime politicians. These are people that are a part of the establishment, of people that are in the bullpen, that get some kind of incentive. All of these people sign the same letters. Karen Bass, down in Denver, Mike Johnson. When my man was over in New York, y'all former mayor, he signed the same list. The Houston mayor, before they practically ran out of money down there. And then you also have Brandon Johnson. They signed all of the same list in order to get incentivized from the federal government when Biden was in there in order to get all these illegal immigrants.
So, Anton.
Yet we couldn't find no money for some reason. We found all of the money for the illegal migrants, but we couldn't find any money to do infrastructure, improve schools, make sure that the rec centers are open.
The infrastructure is not.
Well, that's where I was going next. Come on, guys. Let me move this along. Let me ask you this question. Migrants, immigration, what kind of effect do you believe that has had on the African-American community in this country? Theron, I'll ask you first.
You know, growing up in Georgia, there was always a concern that when you had immigrants who come into Georgia and other places, that we wanted to be able to have access to those jobs, right? And there's always been an emphasis that had to be placed on, like, if we have true American citizens who are here in this country, who are qualified and want to work, let's figure out a way to put them to work. Now, what has happened in this country over the last few decades, even before that, we have had a migration of illegal and documented immigrants here. A lot of them are people who are DACA recipients and people who have been born here. But we also have some folks who enter this country illegally and they're not trying to actually get a pathway to citizenship. And so what we see as an African-American community, Stephen A., is a confluence of, okay, when I go in this place and I look at this restaurant or I go in this particular facility, all I see back there are people who I believe are either here legally or illegally. But then I would say to a lot of the Black folks in our community, okay, well, let's make sure that if we want to do those jobs, we should apply for them. And so I do think that there's a sentiment amongst the African-American community, particularly well, older people, that feel that way. But I would tell you that a lot of these jobs, African-Americans are willing to do, and they are applying for them. But well, you also have people who are here legally, who will come to this country, because not all immigrants are here illegally. Like them, a lot of them are not from places like Mexico and Venezuela and all these places. Yeah.
Let me chime in. Let me tell you why I'm interjecting, because the belief is, yeah, of course, that everybody that's here is not here illegally. We got that. But still, anywhere from 12 to 15 million people crossed the border illegally. We all know that that was the Biden administration telling us that, you know what, there was no crisis at the border, when clearly there was. I think that's a big reason why they lost the election, along with identity politics. Don't get me started with that. But ultimately, what it comes down to is this, Darren. I think that you have a lot of folks out there, not just Democrat, not just Republicans, but independents like myself, that look at it and we look at the Democratic Party and we're saying Black folks make up 13.6% of the population. We're no longer even the dominant minority. And you have a Democratic Party that's willing to sort of shove us to the side because they can afford to do it, because they can take our vote for granted. So by being people who support illegal migrants coming into this country, that's a voting block that ultimately could work in your favor. You even have to, what is it, the state of California, you got people voting on illegal migrants being able to vote when you're supposed to not be able to vote unless you're an American citizen. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about. How do you defend that as a liberal?
Let me say this as a Democrat, and I'm a moderate more so than I am a literal,
okay.
A liberal.
Okay. Okay.
Let me just say this. Number one, I want to make sure that our borders are secure. All right. No one should be entering this country, particularly if you're entering this country illegally to come over here to harm, kill and rape people. I do not want those folks in the country. But the unfortunate thing is that a lot of those people are already here. So if they're here, I want them trying to actively seek citizenship. OK, now, if they're not willing to do that and they're over here committing crimes, we need to send them back. I'm saying that as a Democrat, Stephen A. However, we do have a lot of undocumented immigrants here who are willing to work. I believe that if they're willing to work, they're not committing crimes, they want to be productive citizens, and they're going to pay taxes, let's figure out a way to get them a work permit, whatever state process you need to go, let's make sure they actually are documented and we know where they're working. If they're going to be productive citizens to our environment and to our communities, and particularly in our agriculture community, then I think that we need to give those folks a pathway to get the proper permit to make sure that they're here. Lastly, I'll say this, is that there are a lot of people who leave this country and they say, okay, you know what? I'm here legally. I'm going to go back to my country. And then it takes them forever to try to come back. A lot of folks actually want to leave and come back in the right way. And that's something that I think there's a spirit of bipartisanship in Congress where folks can figure out that those who are here and got sent back or decided to go back where they were here temporarily on a work permit or school, if they want to come back into this country, let's try to minimize the time they need to come back.
And if I go and I rob somebody and I get away with it, and then I go and start a business with the money that I robbed somebody with, is that justified? If I go and I sell drugs inside of my community, and then I use that drug money in order to build a business around, is that justified? Can I do the wrong thing on the outset of what I purpose to do, and then I can justify a pathway to doing the right thing with the support of our federal government and our Democrats? Does that make it right? No. The very foundation, and I would expect for you to understand this, especially with the deporter-in-chief, Barack Obama, because Barack deported way more people than Trump ever could.
3.1 million.
I would expect for you to truly understand that, especially with the Supreme Court taking up birthright citizenship, which should not be afforded to any migrant, anybody, because it should be abolished. It was for the descendants of slaves, for people that did not ask to come here, who had children here or was forced to work here, who had lineage here. And so now birthright citizen is being taken advantage of by illegal migrants that are coming over here getting dual citizenship. Chinese people come over here pregnant. They have children over here And a lot of times they're also leaning into that in order to justify that they need a green card or that they should become a citizen or have a pathway to citizenship. You cannot come over here and do things the wrong way, because not only is it messing up what we have going on over here as far as how we should be allocating resources to the judges and the immigration process, it actually is disrespectful to the people that did it the right way. That's why you had so many migrants, people that are legal citizens in the United States, not supporting illegal migrants having that pathway to citizenship, because they did do it the right way and they believe in American values and principles, and they go about really taking care of us, paying their taxes, and really being model citizens in the United States of America. No, you can't do that.
Got you. But what do you say, Anton, to people that would bring up on the left? They'd bring up Trump and the fact that while he's dogged about his position when it comes to migrants of Hispanic descent or whatever, you've got white South Africans that are coming over here, and supposedly he's facilitating a path for them to come over here as well. And he's not as dogged in his approach towards them as he is towards people who happen to be of Hispanic descent. What would you say to that?
I don't support, and I'm objective across the board. I believe that everybody has to come over here the right way. I do think that there are situations, and the Biden administration uses broadly, there are situations where people are being, you know, genocide and so on and so forth that are happening in other countries. And I'm not talking about just white South Africans. I'm talking about in general. But if we're not going to, and if we're going to deport people back to Haiti, then we shouldn't give any kind of leeway to white South Africans either. So I'm objective in thinking that there should be very much an even playing field across the board as far as what a pathway to citizenship is supposed to look like. And I do not support illegal migrants coming into the United States of America and then gaining a pathway to citizenship. I think that that has happened for far too long. And when the Biden administration sued Texas to keep open the borders while at the same time advocating for money and national security and also at our borders, which also fed into what we was talking about in Taiwan and Ukraine, and they tried to package all of that into one bill, that actually showed you how corrupt our Democrats are inside of our political system.
Darren, before I got a couple of questions before I let you both get on out of here. Thank y'all both for y'all time. I really, really appreciate it. I want to lean back to what Anton had alluded to earlier when he talked about the shootings in Chicago, 39 shot, 6 fatally. Obviously, crime is a huge issue. That's something that all of us pay attention to.
On Juneteenth.
And he talked about
that in there. That's
right. On Juneteenth. Can't forget that. He talked about, you know, the mayor in Chicago. He talked about what's been happening in the streets of Chicago for quite a long time and how nothing has been done about it. I think we've seen people. I remember back in the day when Spike Lee spoke out against Obama because Obama wasn't addressing it nearly enough. And he's from that area and he was the president of the United States and felt that more should have been done to bring attention to the plight of things in the city of Chicago. When you listen to a guy like Anton and other conservatives speak about personal responsibility, speak about addressing these issues, speaking about our willingness as a community to speak up about this just as vehemently as we've been speaking up when this guy Carmelo Anthony was convicted of first degree murder in Texas a little less than 2 weeks ago. What do you say to that when those positions are brought to your attention, Darren, in terms of what liberals or what folks on the left could be doing to better address these situations?
First and foremost, on the Democratic side, we got to start with this. Number one, we support the Second Amendment. But more importantly, Stephen A., we support responsible gun ownership. And what does that look like, right? We have nothing against people who want to be gun owners. Now, in certain states, it's an open carry state. Everyone owns a gun. But we also want to make sure that you lock the guns up and you have the proper storage. Now, let's get into some of the things that are leading to this crime that we're seeing in places like Chicago and others. You have a gang problem. And a lot of these initiations for these gangs are people that are young folks who don't have jobs, that don't have a good parental sort of environment around them. And unfortunately, these gang members are getting them very early and initiating them into these gangs. The other thing that's happening is that you have a big issue with people who don't de-escalate situations anymore. Hypothetical, let's say Anton and I, we were in LA, right? Because he spends a lot of time there. We get into a debate, we get into an argument. Back in the day, Steve, okay, maybe we would punch each other, maybe we'd get in a fight, and maybe even, you know, like, you know, somebody would break
shot.
But now what happens, Stephen A., is that I got to assume that Anton may actually have a gun. He got to assume that I have a gun. And not only could he have a gun, he may actually use it. So what we're seeing with our crime stats is that people in America, and it's not just a black issue, it's everybody, right? that they're de-escalating situations no more with just fighting. They're actually using guns to shoot people. The other thing I would say is this, the issue around crime. We got to give people more access to jobs, right? I believe that people right now are poor, they're hurting, they're hungry, gas prices are out of control. And so they are using these guns and this violence to shoot people. And a lot of them are like turf wars. A lot of these are disagreements about family disagreements, about a partner or a woman or a man. And we're not able to de-escalate that anymore. And then the last thing I would say is this, is that we got to deal with the issue around too many guns on the street. Again, believe in the Second Amendment, be responsible gun ownership, but the access to guns. And when evil people, people who are mentally ill or people who are getting access to these guns to actually inflict pain and murder people, that lies the problem. And it's also our judicial system, our justice system. A lot of these people are reoccurring folks. These are like revolving doors. These are repeat offenders. And then they're getting access to these guns illegally. They're breaking their cars. And so I think our police departments are in a very, very tough situation right now because we also need more community policing. We need more technology to make sure that we can actually know where these guns are coming from. And when you have a murder, you have a case, you can actually quickly access cameras and I'm going to be clear, not actually preying on people, right? But getting cameras set up in the right places where we can actually solve those crimes. So this is a big issue. It's not just a Democratic thing. I think it's an American problem right now.
That's crazy.
Well, it's an American problem, no doubt about it, but it's definitely partially a Black problem. We can't escape that. And Antoine, I'll ask the same question basically for you to answer, but I'll put it this way. Many predominantly Black neighborhoods and cities like Atlanta and Chicago still struggle with violence, failing schools, poverty, despite decades of political promises. So what's the biggest reason those problems persist in your estimation, and what are we going to be able to do about it, particularly considering what you just heard Theron say?
So funny, because if you look at the track record of the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson, he literally ran on the premise of defunding the police. He has completely lost control of his police department. I am in a group chat with multiple police officers in Chicago, and they don't trust his leadership. He has no support for them. He removed ShotSpotter that then would help the police officers respond more effectively. Two crimes that happen inside of these communities, they are juking the stats. Yes, they are. They are juking the stats, and they're reallocating how they're classifying crime. A lot of these crimes actually go unreported. These are not issues of people that are having some kind of domestic dispute and then it spirals out of control. These are people that are targeting other people, carjackings, taking them to ATMs and having them remove money, telling them to give you your phone and so they can get your password. These are drive-bys. When 12 people were shot over Juneteenth, right, this past weekend over in Chicago, that was a drive-by, and they had over 113 shell casings on the ground. They are demonizing the police. They don't support it. They don't want to speak on that. They don't want to be accountable for the fact that they advocated for the police or against the police. They want to say more community policing. That doesn't work. They implemented the Safety Act over in Illinois. That didn't work. They're trying to put in the no bail system. That doesn't work. They're so busy trying to pander for votes instead of solving for the problem by being tough on crime and holding these people accountable. And that's why you also see these teen takeovers. It is predominantly from Black children, teen takeovers. And I'm not talking about takeover as far as like car meets and stuff, but teen takeovers are happening across the United States of America. They're woefully inadequate. They don't have the technology. They can't follow them on social media to be able to preventatively stop. And then they don't even have the tools to hold the parents or them accountable once they find out that something has happened. And now our police departments are reactive. They're not proactive. They can't solve the problems, and they don't have the support of our politicians. And that's why you see what's happening inside of our community. Nobody is even scared of the police. They'll approach the police. I see multiple videos all the time of people talking to the police disrespectful because they don't have any kind of regard for them, because we've created this culture where now cops are bad based off of the uniform, and the majority of those same cops are actually from those neighborhoods that they're policing.
Theron, I'm going to end this interview by asking you both this last question, and I'll start with you. Imagine we're having the same conversation in 2040, about 14 years from now. What would have to happen between now and then for Black Americans to be undeniably better off? I'll start with you, Theron.
Yeah, we got to deal with the root cause, Stephen A. And this is where I think Anton and I agree. We got to make sure that the Black family structure is in place. But we can't sit up here and kid ourselves. Not every Black child that's born in this country is going to have the ability to be born in certain areas where they're going to be able to thrive. Not all Black kids are going to be born in a two-parent household. I was not born in a two-parent household. And so that parent, that man or woman, that husband or wife, that father or mother has got to basically be able to do what they can to make sure you deal with the root cause of the issue. And that is that we got to deal with the issue of poverty and access to a quality education. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of making sure that public schools are fully supported. Then you got to get into the ability to teach people how that if you're going to own a gun, you got to be a responsible gun owner. I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe that people should have guns to protect themselves. There's a lot of folks who get guns to hunt. Then the third thing that we got to do, we got to deal with this issue around hate and mental illness. And I truly believe that if we're having this conversation 20 plus years from now, Stephen A., the issue around mental illness and anxiety, depression, these are all things that we got to deal with. But we got to limit the ability for people to get access legally and illegally to guns that are with the true intent to go out here and actually kill people. We got to reduce that.
Antoine, final say for you, man.
I think that we need to completely divest ourselves against the Democratic Party. And we need to get back to our original conservative values and roots, which the foundation of that is family, God, and then some sort of morality behind holding ourselves accountable. We need to get to snitching and telling, because let's be clear, we all know who the shooters are. We all know who the drug dealers are. We all know who the jack boys are. And we all know who the people are that are committing the majority of the crimes inside of our neighborhoods. We have a cultural problem. And not only do we have a cultural problem, we have a cult following for the Democratic Party. And somehow, some way, they have done a Jedi mind trick on us that we need to vote and we need to support people based off of identity, because it's so funny. I could look at this guy, right? Not you, Theron. I'm just speaking of some hypothetical guy. And we'll say, I'm going to support him because he's Black. We don't do a character check. We don't find out if he's married. We don't find out if he beats his wife. We don't find out if he's actually a decent person, if he's a fraud. And in so many instances, we don't force people to pull the receipts, which then we then make a fool of ourselves. And instead of us actually taking accountability, we say, well, you know what? Well, look at this person and they're doing well. Well, look at the good that they did. But we have lost our way. We are a godless people. We have allowed for women to lead our households. We allow for people to say we want partners instead of we want husbands. And we do not have any kind of backbone on saying the uncomfortable things so that we can get to the solution. And nobody is willing to actually be honest with ourselves. We have lost our way completely. We have walked away from God. We have walked away from our conservative values. And we've walked away from things that's right as far as promoting the best for us and culture in order to subsidize our lifestyle by saying that, well, at least we are part of the go-along, get-along gang. I'm not for it. I actually don't. No. I think we should tear the whole system down. And to answer your original question, in 2040, we will be here talking about this and having the same conversation, and we will be worse off than we ever have been unless we do those things.
You're probably right about that, unless we do something about it. Let me close by saying this to both of y'all. First of all, thank y'all both for taking time out of your busy schedules for being on this call. And I'm going to put myself on Front Street. Obviously, I've been incredibly blessed and fortunate to be as successful as I am. All right. And I'm a dad, and I'm in a very, very good position to be able to provide for and take care of my family, not just my immediate family, but my extended family. I say all of that to say this. I happen to know and agree with both of y'all wholeheartedly. As proud as I am as a dad, one of the greatest injustices that I've ever committed is the fact that I had two children out of wedlock, which is the only time in my entire life that my mother was disappointed in me. That's the only thing that ever disappointed her about me. I've been left back. You understand? She didn't. You know, I believe in you. You know, I believe in you and all that stuff. But when I did that, she was so disgusted. And I happen to know that y'all are both right about that. When you talk about the structure of the family and being together and building from that premise, that's what it's all about. And to do otherwise just makes the road a hell of a lot harder. And I'm saying that as a brother that's pretty well off at this particular moment in time. So I appreciate what both of y'all had to say. Can't have a conversation and not be authentic on my side of the fence. There's just no way around it. Y'all are both right when y'all bring that up. I appreciate it. And I also want to share with the audience, this will not be edited. every conversation that we had here, every word. Anton, I saw you giving me props for that when you came on my show. It's the truth.
No, I'm not
editing anything out. So I really, really appreciate y'all both. And y'all know y'all are both welcome back on the show anytime. Thank y'all from the bottom of my heart.
I appreciate Darren, and he's a really good guy also. I just wanted to say that. I respect your work. I actually did a lot of research and understand who you are. You are a very, very intelligent brother, and I have a lot of regard and a lot of respect for you.
Yes.
Just wanted to let you know.
And I'm very happy to have met you, Theron.
Same thing, guys. Thank you, Stephen A. Anton. It's been an honor to debate you. And thank you, Stephen A., for this opportunity, man. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate both of y'all. Y'all take it easy, all right?